Hey everyone, you're listening to the LFC Podcasting Couch, and this episode's brought to you by Pharmacy Mart, Fairfield, New South Wales. Now, if you mention this podcast to the team, you'll receive 20% off their entire vitamin and sports supplement range. That's Pharmacy Mart opposite the Fairfield train station. And if you want any more location details, head to pharmacymart.com.au. Now, let's get on with the show.
Lovely cushion header. Pacheco!
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 80 of the LFC Podcasting Couch. My name is Nish and I am joined by the magnificent Rich in North Hants. Are you there, good sir?
I am here. How are you?
Woo, very good, mate. It's we had a bit of a chat beforehand going, what are we going to talk about? Because there's nothing to talk about. And then we both mutually agreed, that's fantastic.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing to have nothing to talk about whatsoever.
How nice does it actually... I mean, there's people screaming and crying and plenty and plenty of conspiracy theories about what's happening in the background. But frankly, I absolutely love it because I'm hoping and praying... Well, I think we both know for sure that there's stuff going on. You know, they haven't put down tools and just decided we're not going to work anymore for this transfer season. But how nice would it be if suddenly... ex-player out of nowhere, hey, is just leaning in Melwood with a photo shoot, and we've announced him. How different would that be?
I think it'd be amazing, wouldn't it? I think it's probably every true Liverpool fan's dream that literally sort of come Wednesday, Thursday of next week, you know, or once the transfer window opens in July. I mean, this is the joke. Window's not even open yet. Yeah. Everybody's gone into meltdown mode. You know, and Twitter is full of abuse to John Henry's missus because, like, she's totally responsible for everything that goes on at LFC, and you know we should all have realized that by now.
Yeah,
you know, it's just, you know, it would be lovely to have a photo of sort of five marquee signings all leaning on each other, leaning on the Melwood sign,
just having a hug,
just kind of, yeah, do you know what I mean?
They're all just hugging Klopp at once,
Klopp in the middle, hugging them all out, you know, and just
that's fantastic.
It's just we've experienced silly seasons before, and I get that, and I get with all the hype around this season with potential Champions League. So let's face it, it's only potential at the moment.
Yeah.
But potential Champions League, and the money being available, and talks of, you know, 200 million, 250 million. You know, the world's our oyster. We're buying Messi and Suarez and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's really ramped up the pressure.
Yeah,
and we've had one monumental screw up, which we're not even going to talk about. And before you know it, you know, the world is in meltdown, and you know we're going to go shopping in you know, in the sort of the second division to see if we can scramble a couple of players that might come good in the future. And
hopefully, they're just older than the age of 15 years old. And
yeah, you know, and it's just absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? And I think this is, in a way, I suppose it's to be expected, but I think you're absolutely right. You know, if we all think that everyone's just down tools and that's it, and nothing's happening and nothing's going on,
yeah,
I think we've been incredibly deluded.
Exactly. And I think it's just, you can't just say just Liverpool fans. We know they're crazy, but I think it's pure football fans, that, as we can tell by Arsenal as well. There always needs to be a scapegoat, always. And if it's not the obvious choice, being, you know, let's say FSG, or if it's not the obvious choice of a manager or a player, then they'll pick someone random. And lately it's been Michael Edwards, and people are like, oh, he's definitely the one who leaked it to the media. And I was like, really? Because he's such a social butterfly. Of course, he's definitely in it for personal gain. It's just some of the things that come out just totally... Anyway, let's not speculate because it does get a bit boring. I am also right now watching the pathetic San Marino versus Germany game. Germany now 7 goals up against them. Why? Why are they still allowed to qualify? They're part-timers, but...
I think that's to come up when you turn around. And I know it's unfair, but maybe there should be for the lesser team. I hate using that phrase, lesser teams, but for lesser teams, maybe there should be a competition that they have, and those that qualify, so you have the best of the lesser teams, and then they move up and they play against the bigger teams, Germany, because that way... Potentially what happens is that it's not so demoralizing for them as well. I mean, they can't want to keep watching their national side game in, game out, just getting smashed around the park all the while. Surely there's got to be something in in having a more competitive tournament that they can be part of, with the pot of you then go in to play against the bigger guys and keep running it that way, would seem to be a logical process, maybe.
Definitely. Well, in point at least, the guy who has just scored a hat-trick is Sandro Wagner from Hoffenheim. Giant of a man, absolutely massive. Quite decent, not very fast, but very decent in the air, and scored a hat-trick. So I don't know if you've ever seen him play, but not bad.
I haven't, but just be careful what you're saying, because before you know it, people will then they'll be scouting videos, doing the rounds, and you know everything else will go on from there, and it'll just be
Klopp's number one target confirmed by Michael Edwards.
Yeah, Christ. You know what I mean? It's just ridiculous. It really is, and like I said, this silence at the moment is absolutely golden for me. I love it. You know, the old days. Do you remember the old days? The old days we actually didn't have like Twitter and Facebook, and social media was non-existent.
Of course.
I know you're so young, you probably don't recall those.
Oh, I'm 35. I'm not that young.
Well, still 8 years than me, but
definitely.
You know, the way that we got our news was scarily enough. We went and bought a thing called a newspaper, and you know,
teletext.
There would occasionally be teletext, team talk.
Yeah,
call team talk and get all the latest. And, you know, days like this and weeks like this, I would absolutely love to go back to those days. I've gone on Twitter twice in the last couple of days, and I type in hashtag LFC and I go to the latest tab. So latest of anyone who's putting anything on there. And it's just in bile and hatred and loathing. And to a point where I just don't. The only thing I watch is obviously the LFC podcasting couch videos.
Thank you.
Which are all great. Long may I continue to get mentions. Don't mention Grumpy Frog. Leave him out in the cold because he loves that so much.
Grumpy Frog. He's baiting. He just baits everyone now. He's like, I'm going to write a video about FSG out and then I'm going to tag him in it.
The one thing I will say on this, and this is the only thing I'm going to say on it, because I'm an FSG in anyway, and if people don't like it, bite me.
Yeah, opinion, you're allowed it.
The one thing that always makes me made me chuckle was that I was scrolling through Twitter and there was a periscope of FSG We Come Not to Pay.
Yeah, Fenway We Come Not to Pay. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was on there saying, you know, I take it all back. You know, Virgil van Dijk, Mo Salah, you know, this shows the commitment. This is what we've been waiting for, you know. So if these two deals come off, you won't hear anything else from me. You know, I will quietly sit in the background, but I'll be here to make sure if they step over a line that we'll be here to make that point. And I was quite pleased at
That's
this. This was
admirable,
probably the
right?
best part about those two signings happening than anything else.
Mm.
So now they're not happening. I just daren't go back to it again now, because you can I can hear the fume without even going.
You could see it in the sky. Just look up anywhere in the world, and you just see FSG out written in the clouds.
Yeah, green fog in itself. FSG out. Sorry, hashtag.
Hashtag. FSG. I don't know.
Scouts, depending on how you want.
I've just got this weird self-belief completely that even if we sign Joe Nobody from the weird, you know, Afghan league or something, that Klopp will turn him into a superstar. I don't care how much they cost. I don't care if they're cheap as peanuts. I know we do need those certain quality players in our club, but I've just got a weird feeling that we're just going to have a phenomenal year regardless, and that's just my level of positivity. So, meh.
I think it's a lot of people's level of positivity. I don't think it's just you, Nish. You know, I don't think that. Yeah, I suppose this is the thing, isn't it? When things aren't going well, and this is not just football, this is anything. There is this. The ones that are always shouting the loudest are the ones that aren't happy. The ones that are happy tend to just sit back because they're happy. And I think this is the thing now, because everyone else is kind of looking at it and going, do you know what? I'm just not going to go on Twitter because it's just really depressing at the minute. I'm going to stay away.
Yeah.
So all it does is it makes the negativity look even more now, if you like, than what it was before. And I think that's quite noticeable in a lot of ways that's the thing that's going on at the moment. So I think there are genuinely a lot of people like you, like myself, who are sort of sitting there and thinking, do you know what? This is fine. The window's not open yet. Yeah. Other business will be going on. Conversation will be going on. If they haven't announced Salah, there are reasons for it. And yes, apparently his agents tweeted out something. I don't care. They can carry on doing their games and do whatever they want.
That's their job.
The people that know what. Yeah, exactly. He's there to try and drum it up. And you know what? There was one bit I read today that was there's no action being taken against Liverpool Football Club by the FA with regards to the Southampton Van Dijk saga. Mm-hmm. That apparently Southampton are happy enough with the apology and they're quite happy just to leave things as they are.
Yeah. Or reopen negotiations, you know? They've drawn a line in the sand. This is where you've crossed. Let's start again. Let's make up and go from there.
And that was exactly the next line that came out, was that all Premier League clubs are meeting at the FA across a table on Monday.
Yeah. Simple.
Apparently. So, you know, is there at some point the Southampton chairman and the Liverpool chairman go, come on, let's go grab a cup of tea. Let's have a chat about this. Okay. Because the thing is, tapping up goes on all the while. I mean, I listen religiously to the Anfield Rap. I think the funny thing was they did like a load of stuff on it. There was articles they wrote on it, and they've come back loads of humble pie, gutted with what's happened. But they made the point as well that everyone crosses the line, because hang on a minute. Arsenal apparently had been talking to him. Mm-hmm. City had been talking to him. Chelsea. United apparently has come out and talked to him. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just us, but clearly we crossed a line somewhere.
Yeah.
So we need to understand where that is. We need to walk it back. If we can. And if we don't, then we look at the other options that are out there and we bring someone else in. Would I like to see him at the club? Yeah, of course I would. Do I think that's the right deal? Now he's come out and said that? Absolutely. But if you do want to see something funny, go to 44 Tunes on YouTube and go and have a look at the Virgil van Dijk, Jurgen Klopp tapping up video.
I've seen that.
That's just pure genius. The shower scene as he comes down in Mission Impossible style is just legendary. So much kudos to the guys at 442.
So good, aren't they? Ridiculous.
Long may the silence continue, Nish. Long must we have nothing at all to talk about other than leaning celebrities.
Well, I'll admit there was a slight change. Well, there was a slight reason I kind of wanted you to come on this particular podcast, because I'm actually an admirer of your work. So if anyone hasn't listened to Rich on the Anfield Road Wolves, he is pretty much there. What do you like, Larry King? I don't know. Who's your favorite interviewer of all time? Do you have one?
I'm trying to think what they nicknamed me. I think they nicknamed me David Dimbleby?
I have no idea who that is.
I think he does Question Time or something on the BBC. But yeah, I basically just get any interviewer you care to. Larry King was the other one I got. The Larry King of the Anfield Road Wolves.
Yeah, I just said Larry King this then. Yeah, so because you know, I'm a 80s and 90s kid. Larry King was everywhere. So, but I genuinely wanted you on because I've been listening religiously to the podcast, your interviews, especially when you had Andrew Beasley, Bass Tuned to Red. You had James Pearce, who was the most recent one, and the one before that was Paul Tompkins and the Tompkins Times. And it's just fascinating to hear the background and understand, especially where they came from, what got them into Liverpool so much in the first place to dedicate their entire lives to it, pretty much, especially in James Pearce's world where that's his day job. And then understand the thinking behind these people, because they are genuinely experts in their field. So do you mind if we talk a little bit about your experience talking to these people? I know it's a little bit different to the usual, but I'm interviewing the interviewer, if that's the case. Is that cool?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fine. I mean, the amusing thing is that there's nothing edited out of them. So it's literally what you hear is the conversation that takes place. So yeah, it's
raw and unadulterated.
Yeah, it's in fact, actually, I'll tell a lie. The only time that it does change is that occasionally the quality of the signal drops out a little bit.
Yeah.
And because we're so keen to make sure that we get the best quality across and make sure that we put it out in the right way, Occasionally, we will re-record the question literally word for word, but it just takes out some of the crackle or any sort of distortion in the sound. But yeah, I mean, it's literally, it is as you hear it. So if we think back to, obviously, the first one I did was with Andrew Beasley, and I know Andrew through Twitter, and he and I have chatted a while, and some people may remember that I also used to run with Craig, who now sort of heads up the Anfield Road Wolves. We did the Liver Nerds.
Oh, yes.
Which, due to a whole variety of reasons, has gone quiet for a while, and at some point will come back. Twitter feed's still going and still does well as and when I can get on there and get messaging out. But I'd had conversations with him, and he'd done a Q&A with us on there before. And we had a massive reaction to it on the website, you know, from being relatively new and unheard of to suddenly getting all of these people coming in and having a read because of the power of Bass Tune to Red. And if you haven't been and seen it, oh, go follow the guy, because he's absolutely brilliant, really interesting guy. And he was my first one up. And that was quite nice, because at least I had some kind of experience and knowledge of him, so that was really nice to have a chat with him.
Well, do you want to give do you want to give like a really quick, just for people who've never heard of this guy, because really he is more of a Twitter celebrity, shall we say, rather than anything else, but do you want to give us a, just for the listeners who've never heard of him, just like a two-minuter on who Andrew Beasley is?
Sure, absolutely. So Andrew Beasley, who's at Bass Tune to Red, and he's been a football writer, and he was doing football writing for the Tompkins Times, which interestingly was the second interview that I did, which was with Paul Tompkins. So Bass Tune to Red has his own website, which is basstunetored.com. And he'd basically, he will write something that's of interest to him. So he has very little, he does a lot of statistics and a lot of, sort of background information, but he's not the kind of person that will sit there and go, okay, so I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. It's literally, he'll come across a fact, whether that be through Optostat or wherever it may be that he finds it, and he'll go, that's really interesting, I'm going to look into this a little bit more. So he'll sort of delve into it, look into things a little bit more detail, and then he'll try and work out how he can make that more simplistic for other people to understand, and basically put it out there on the internet. And that's what he does. And this was just a hobby of his. He was, you know, just something that kept him ticking over. And he got a really, really good feedback from it.
Awesome.
So that's what he used to do. Oh, yeah. He was great. I mean, he does stuff like on his website at the moment, Klopp's record with subs and late goals. And so, excuse me, he'll look at stuff like that. Do teams that frequently cross the ball get bad results? Which teams are best at defeating a parked bus? So it doesn't even have to be kind of Liverpool related, but obviously best teams at defending defeating a parked bus. Obviously, he's a Liverpool fan. He knows the problems we've had in the previous season about breaking teams down. That's what cues his interest. And then he'll go out and he'll start looking into it in more detail. And he puts it out there for everyone else to have a look at. And he does loads of spreadsheets and stuff as well. What was really interesting with Andrew was that he's just accepted redundancy, I believe. And so he now wants to make this a career out of doing this. And that was another why he came on to do the podcast, because it was an opportunity, if you like, for him to be able to really sort of promote himself a little bit and get people to know a little bit more about him and why he did stuff. And the whole point of the podcasts, just as a bit of background, really, in case no one has yet listened to them, it's very much a, what was life like growing up? Why on earth did you choose Liverpool? And what was it that drove you to do that? What was the first game that you went to? What was that experience like? How did you find it? What are your thoughts on what's going on at the moment? And we talk about the team and other things and previous managers and these bits and pieces. But it's always very much focused on sort of them and where they grew up and how they ended up being a Liverpool fan. And that for me was the real appeal of doing them. And to be fair, it's pretty much the only podcast that I do for the ARW. I did a guest one the other week, but mostly now these are the ones that I do. And we've got another three in the pipeworks at the moment. So hopefully we'll have more to announce on that soon.
It's very exciting. Can you tell me a little bit about the guy himself? What were your thoughts on him in particular? There's so many different types of fans out there. What did you gather from the podcast and interviewing him that made him, I guess, special?
For me, I think it was this bit that we were just talking about the stats. And I think that was what really intrigued me, because he was... I think when you look at his Twitter feed, and it seems quite stat heavy, and just the sheer fact that it was just a sheer love of wanting to find out more information and understand trends and understand why people were reacting the way that they were reacting and the things that they wanted to do. That for me was the big interest with him. His personal life was he's very similar to a lot of people. You know, he growing up watching Liverpool on the TV, with it only being, you know, very rare that you got to see games, which then because the television coverage wasn't as it is now. And I think even sort of the younger generations that live it don't kind of get that, whereas we do, you know, match of the day. And we spoke to, in all of the interviews, we've had this conversation about, you know, do you remember when the FA Cup final was an entire day of coverage? It wasn't just this, you know, this edited version where, you know, oh, this was earlier at the team bus and oh, this was, we were literally from 10 o'clock in the morning. It was, you know, our reporters are down at the team hotel talking to the players. They were on the bus with them as they actually drove to Wembley. You got to see all the crowds lining the streets on the way in. And sort of how football had changed, and he was the same as me, where he kind of looks back at it and looks at the changes, and, you know, we asked the question of whether things had changed for the better or not. And it was that side of things for me was really fascinating on the very first one, just to actually, I suppose, to realise that my views and my opinions were actually shared by quite a few people. And I was surprised by that.
Yeah, and it's especially someone along those lines, there's so much passion in football. You have to be passionate about the club, obviously, to keep it going for so long. But to stick around as well, that's a bit that really surprises me a lot, especially in Australia over here. It's been, what, 28 years? How long has it been since we won a title? But it's different. This club is different. Football's different. It's one of those things where if you get your heart and soul embedded into it, and it can be the FA Cup, for instance... FA Cup seems to have lost its glamour a lot when it comes to TV and how we cover and do coverage of it. But my God, it'll be beautiful to win that bloody thing again.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's, but again, this was something else that we talked about as well. And we talked about, you know, what is it that keeps us sort of tied into the club and spending so much time, and it, you know, it's not the cash, it's the emotional energy that we put in, game out, season in, season out, close season in, close season out, that why we're all getting so excitable during the transfer window. I think it's this, we emotionally buy into the club because of what it means to us, because we can relate to the club, because it's, you know, this constant battle to prove that we are as good as we know we are and that we are as big as we are. But everyone else kind of over the years and because of not winning a Premier League title sort of use this as a stick to beat us with. And I think it's the easiest thing in the world, isn't it? You know, the chance about Stevie G never lifting the Premier League trophy and all this kind of stuff. It's just such a cheap shot. But the problem is it's true. And, you know, there just seems to be this continual fight. And I think actually it's almost like being the underdog that drives us all on to turn around and go, do you know what? You can keep saying what you like and, you know, give us as much grief as you like. You know, we've got five Champions League cups. You know, we've done it five times. You guys haven't. We're still big. We're still, the coverage is massive. You know, how many clubs don't have a weighted, don't have a waiting list because ours is so big we've had to shut the damn thing. You know, it's all those kinds of things, I think, that we know what we are and we feel it in our hearts and we're very passionate about it. And the more people kind of use these things to beat us with, the more determined it makes us to kind of stick on in there and go, do you know what? Screw you. This is how we're going to be.
Definitely. And it's a big reason why I enforcing myself to always stay positive. I'm not going to be there slagging off our club and slagging off everything we do and all the different moments, because I truly believe that that moment when we do win, and I do know we will win the Premier League again, and we will become a dominant force in Europe again, I can hold my head up and say that I always had hope in my heart, just like the song, just like what we're doing. There's no point following the club like this if you're constantly just going to slag it off and what's going to happen. I want us to win it and win it the right way and win it the Liverpool way, which isn't entirely buying the title like we as fans slagged off Chelsea and Man City for so long. I do know that the way we're going to win is the Liverpool way, which is the work your ass off, do things the right way, and the good stuff will come. And I do know it's going to come. And I think those of us who are just consistently behind the club through thick and thin should be the ones who feel the most, who feel just the most joy out of that win when it does come, because we did just constantly believe in our club that we'll do the right thing. That's just a personal thought. I'm not saying that the people who do slag off the club don't deserve happiness. It's just more the case that I feel that we're those of us who never swayed in the slightest.
Absolutely. See, here's the thing, Nish, right? Imagine the scene, okay? We're going to fast forward to the end of the upcoming season. We need a win, last game of the season, to win the Premier League. And we win it. What do you do the moment that final whistle goes and Liverpool are confirmed as Premier League champions?
Jesus Christ. I'll probably shed us quiet, not even quiet here, probably ball up completely. I'll be on the other side of the world, probably crying my eyes out with happiness. I'm not kidding.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is the thing, isn't it? Because that's the difference between us, I think, and other clubs where, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, there are lots of Chelsea fans this season that have went and gone, oh, done it again. Good that, isn't it?
It's a bit sad.
It's not going to be like that for Liverpool fans. And it is sad because it does mean so much. And, you know, the day that we win the Premier League, I have made this promise a long, long time ago. I will be somewhere. I will be somewhere in the streets of Liverpool. Eventually, for the tour, for the parade, I will be there, whether I'm hanging off of a lamppost, I will probably be hugging random strangers. It will be the most amazing experience. And I think we've seen bus parades before. If you think back to Istanbul, when we brought back old Big Ears for the fifth time, and you think about the scenes out in the streets of Liverpool when they brought the trophy home. Yeah. Can you imagine? Can you even start to imagine how big that crowd is going to be?
Yeah,
it's just going to be immense. And that, I think, is the thing that drives us. And I think if you look at Liverpool as a city and look back over its history, and I know, oh, that's it, look at your history. But actually, history defines the future. And if you look at the history of Liverpool, the citizens of Liverpool, all the things they've had to go through, all the battles that they've faced, all the challenges that they've took on, everything that's happened to that city, and yet they still believe, they still keep fighting. And the football club reflects the city. Yeah. And that's why Liverpool Football Club is what it is. It is because of Heysel. It is because of Hillsborough. It is because of the battle for justice for the 96. It is because we're the ones that turn around and go, enough is enough, and walk out and make our protest about seat pricing.
Yeah.
It is because we stand up and make statements to the club that they don't like and that they don't want to hear, but they need to hear it. That's the Liverpool way. And we'll do this. We climb the hill our own way. That's what we do. And we'll always continue to do that. And, you know, I'll take all the grief that every other football fan, and trust me, there's plenty throw at me because they know I'm a Liverpool fan. And I just smile it off because one of these days it's going to happen. And do you know what? Jurgen Klopp gives us the best chance. I genuinely, genuinely believe we have the best manager to bring home that Premier League title. Brilliant. And it may not be next season, but it will be one season before he leaves the club.
For sure. I've got zero doubt in the world about that too. And it's going to be done the right way. it's going to be done the Liverpool way. And that's the exciting bit about it. So I'm just, I get goosebumps just thinking about it, to be honest. It's, and it's got nothing to do, what pisses me off a lot about the internet is that a lot of people cry and whinge because they're embarrassed. They're embarrassed when Liverpool end up seventh. They're embarrassed when Liverpool don't do well in Europe or something. They're embarrassed. I'm my whole point is I'm never embarrassed because you only get embarrassed because you care about someone else's opinion. And I really don't care about someone else's opinion, especially a rival fan, because that's their job, is to make you feel like you are in an inferior club. So they're going to do it even if you win the title. You can win everything and an opposition fan will say something or find some reason to bring you down anyway. So don't feel embarrassed, guys. Just back your team. This is our beautiful club and we'll be good. Anyway, let's get back on topic because I do want to hear about the next ones, especially because they're just so fascinating. Paul Tompkins, Tompkins Times. That was your second getting to know interview. And again, I don't know too much about Tompkins and Paul Tompkins. I only knew about he was popular and he ran that site and so forth. So to listen to his story was pretty fascinating, and where he came from and how he got close. Again, if you can go above and beyond what you talked about in the interview, more think about the person. What did you take away from talking to him and what he is like as a fan or as a human being?
As a human being, an amazing, amazing guy. So much respect for him in so many ways. When I was told that I was going to be interviewing, I'm same as you, all I knew was Tompkins Times. Okay, so I knew that bit about him. Fine, not a problem at all. So you kind of, I had a brief little look round and see what happened. I didn't realize he'd written books and that he was, you know, a published author and all this kind of stuff. And that was kind of crazy as well. But when we initially did the podcast, we sort of said, you know, how do you feel about it and sort of time wise and everything else. And he was like, well, we'll see how we go, you know, but sort of an hour will be fine. You know, he says, I probably haven't got that much that's of interest to anybody. And I was like, yeah, I'm not buying that for one second. You know, there's bound to be, you know, a lot of stuff that people want to know about you. And he was like, oh, well, we'll see. And before we went live on the recording, I sort of said to him, you know, what was it that made you want to do the podcast? Because I was genuinely intrigued as to what drove him to do it. And he said, you know, I've been asked to do loads and loads of podcasts and I've always turned them down. And the reason I turned them down is because they were always about football and they were never about me. And this was going to be something about me. This was something special that, you know, people would probably be interested to hear. And then he turned around to me and went, and the stories I've got to tell you about Rafa and John Henry and FSG is just, you know, I think you'll probably like them.
That's cool.
And I was like, well, exactly. And that moment, I was like, whoa, hold on a minute. So what's this about FSG? How does that all tie in? He went, we'll get to all that. Don't you worry.
That's so cool.
And I was like, yeah, absolutely. You know, when you're like, oh, okay, here we go. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, even if you're in or out the FSG, that would have to, you know, spark your brain just going, oh, I have to know more.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, you know, and we started off and I sort of asked him the first couple of questions about, you know, growing up and football, and just couldn't shut the guy up. Just couldn't keep him quiet, to the point where we hit the hour mark. And we did actually take a break. And I said to him, I said, look, you know, are you okay? How do you feel? Are you okay to keep going on? I'm very conscious that, you know, we've been talking for a while and we were probably only going to go for the hour. And he was like, no, I'm good. Let me just go and grab something to eat. So he disappears off for 2 minutes and goes and grabs himself some crackers and cheese and has a little bite to eat in the background. And before you know it, you know, he's back again and went for another hour and a bit. And jokingly, he turned around at the end of the podcast. It was just before the Liverpool game was about to kick off. I can't remember which game it was now, but there was it was literally just before one of the games on the Sunday. And he said to me, right, okay. I hope it was okay. And I was like, seriously, it's like 2 hours long. We're going to have to do it in two parts, which is why it became the two-parter. And he said, where are you going to do the break? And I said, well, we'll probably do the break when we start talking about FSG and Rafa and everything else. And he went, cool. Everyone will enjoy the second part more than they will the first. And I thought that was quite interesting because it was quite humble that he was basically saying people aren't going to be bothered about me and growing up and everything else. But actually, they all want to know about Rafa and FSG and players and, you know, writing for Liverpool and why I left. And I thought that was very interesting of the guy that he was so humble that it was, you know, he genuinely thought that people would only be interested about the juicy Liverpool stuff. And funnily enough, the figures were higher on part one than part two.
Yeah, I can imagine. It was, I was totally fascinated. Again, it's one of those ones where I love biographies anyway. So I love learning about the man or the person or the female, whoever, behind the story completely.
Yeah.
So those stories about, you know, meeting someone or, you know, what happened when are all well and good. But how did that human get to that point in time is what really gets me.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was interesting to kind of hear him talking about his journey and how it all came to be. And if people want to listen to it, seriously, go download it, listen to the podcast, and you'll get the full story of everything and how it came to pass. What was really ironic was that when we were talking about the podcast, and actually this kind of ties into the conversation we've had today, he was saying that when he tweets something positive, he gets a load of abuse. And when he posts something negative, he gets loads and loads of retweets. So if he puts something out such as, you know, Liverpool were unlucky in this game, you know, could have gone so differently, if this and this had gone the other way, he'll get a load of abuse. And again, he gets this title, the same as James Pearce, who we'll come on to in a minute, about being an FSG apologizer, you know, and all the keyboard warriors get out and give him a load of abuse. And we were talking about this during the podcast, and I think after the podcast as well. And what was really interesting was after that game, which we lost, I think, or we drew, whichever it was, and he tweeted a statistic or a comment out on Twitter, and true enough, just got dog's abuse for it. And he shut his Twitter account down, and just went, I don't need it. And his biggest criticism, although he loved Twitter, you know, he just said, it's so difficult, because if you're well known or you put something out, people love to follow you, but they will absolutely abuse you to the hilt if you say something that they don't agree with. And it just gets to a point where he just can't be dealing with it anymore. And he just goes, yeah, I'm done. And so he only tweeted from the Tompkin Times Twitter feed, but refused to engage with fans or with anybody else. He just walked away.
Yeah, that's it's a big problem that I found with Twitter is it's I'm enjoying the fact that my follower count's going up primarily because it's making my podcast listens go up quite a lot as well. It's not about me getting Twitter famous, but it seems like there's a lot of people out there who are so desperate to be Twitter famous that they can't differentiate between their opinion and the truth, and they end up calling their opinion the brutal truth. And so they can't seem to get it out of their head that if someone is saying something different to your opinion, that is also that individual's opinion. That could actually be fact. And because, I don't know what it is, but it's people are so desperate to get to that point where they get loads and loads of followers that they will pander to what's popular at the time, even if it's not completely right, but they'll call it the brutal truth anyway. So, I mean, I may be completely and utterly wrong about FSG. I'm totally fine with that. If you're right and I'm wrong, we'll find out in time. But don't expect me to believe when you have a point of view that is the brutal truth. It's not. It's your opinion. And it'll always be, no matter what kind of supposed, in inverted commas, facts you throw at me. So, Ugh, it's
And the real irony of that is, isn't this something that we've been fighting against for donkey's years with people printing what they said was the truth, irrespective of whether it was or exactly. not? And then all of a sudden, you know, it's kind of, you know, they'll make the story kind of fit the needs that as they see it and how they want it to be. And I just think it's a great shame. And I think especially as well, someone like Paul, who is so insightful, you know, is well respected. I mean, let's not forget, this is the guy that had the Facebook request from John W. Henry, basically turning around and saying, "Can we have a chat? Can we have a chat?" And he basically blew it off and just sort of thought it was a prank and didn't even bother replying until he then gets an email from John W. Henry's team turning around and going, "We sent you a Facebook friend request and you ignored it. You know, can we get together and have a chat?" And the next thing you know, he's sitting in London with John, you know, and having a coffee and talking about things to the point where, and again, this is in the podcast, but
yeah.
John Henry actually asks him if he would join him in the box and teach him the game of football and explain the intricacies and, you know, the detail,
yeah.
And do that. And unfortunately, because of Paul's illness and his health, he turned that down. And actually, I've just found it was on the 24th of April. And we'd just tweeted out about the podcast going live. And he just put, "I don't have the energy for Twitter these days. Saps my spirit, screws my health, makes me miserable and angry, kills the very last hairs on my head."
So sad, isn't it?
And then every message after that was, "I know, Paul, but some of us appreciate your comments. We appreciate the effort. Keep it up. You know, in which case I would jack it in as an advertising tool. It serves you little purpose. All those who follow you are already sold on what you think."
Yeah. Anyway, let's move. That's a perfect segue onto a person who cops it more and can't leave Twitter because it's his job, sadly.
The man's going nowhere. We need him back. How dare he? Can I just say, how dare James Pierce? James, if you're listening to this, I know you probably won't, but James, if you're listening to this, how dare you take some holiday of a time where probably Liverpool fans and skeptics need you there the most?
They need bad news, Pierce, or good news, Pierce.
We need you to tell us that all of this is all lies anyway, and none of this is happening. James Pierce, how dare you leave us when you need us?
Where's the James Pierce? I'll do a little bit of a Adam West plug because sadly he passed away today, but we also need a James Pierce, you know, bat signal to go up in the sky. We need the big P in the sky. Rest in peace, by the way, Adam West. I'll never forget the Batman dude. What a man, the original. But yeah, James, I had the pleasure of talking to him properly on the recent Sydney tour. He's just an insanely lovely guy. But again, I'm sure you're probably going to say the same thing, but tell me again, you spending that time on the podcast and talking to him, have you met him before or talked to him before the podcast?
No, this is, again, these are all firsts for me every single time. And you get a little bit, I won't say starstruck, it's not in that sense, but because I you know, these are people that I follow on Twitter, that probably didn't know me from Adam beforehand. Fair play to, I think it was Benji Webb, our good friend and friend of the podcast, big time Benji Bear, that managed to set this up for us. And he has the ear of James Pierce, seemingly.
That's phenomenal. So,
which is interesting. Hence the big time Benji Bear.
That's it. tell us about him. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, almost on a par with Big Fish Nish. I mean, first time of speaking to him, I mean, again, fair play to the guy. He didn't need to come and talk to us. You know, there was no reason for him to do that whatsoever. But he did. He made time for us. I think we actually did the podcast at about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. He'd apologized because he'd been running late, because he'd been held up in various different aspects of his life and his job. You know, he'd got print to get out and everything else. And obviously it was quite tight towards the end of the season. I think it was just before the West Ham game, I want to say, towards the end of the season. So what was that? Two games out before the end of the season?
Something like that, yeah.
West Ham.
West Ham's the second last one.
Second last, yeah. So he'd obviously, it was the West Ham game, then there was another game, then it was the end of the season, then he was jumping on a plane, then he was flying off to Oz. So it was really a case of, look, you know, if you want to get in and have a chat, we can do it, but, you know, it'll have to be pretty rushed. So we didn't do the intro and the outros. We left all of those out to kind of free up more time. He came straight on. And again, you know, really, really nice guy, really, really relaxed. I asked him, had he seen, because I'd sent him a list of the kinds of things, not to prep it, but because I think with him, I was more aware that because of his job role, I had to be more careful about the kinds of things we were asking him. For example, if I turn around to Paul Tompkins and said, what are your thoughts on FSG? He can turn around and give them honestly and openly, and there's no kind of issues there. If I turn around to Paul Tompkins and said, you know, who do you think we should sign? And he sort of started rattling off names. There's no issue. If James Pearce does that, you can imagine where that goes from there. So, oh, James Pearce says Mignolet should be sold, or, you know, which I don't agree with, by the way. And neither did James Pearce, for all you Mignolet haters out there.
Nice.
I'm thinking Matty Lyne, Nads. just saying.
Great.
But yeah, so, yeah. There has to be, you know, I just didn't want him to feel uncomfortable. So I kind of said, look, you know, I sent you through the list of bits and pieces. He says, well, I briefly looked at it, but I didn't really give it too much attention, but I'm sure it'll all be fine. If there's anything I'm not comfortable with talking about, I will tell you. And I was like, okay. And I went, just out of interest, I really want to ask you about being an FSG apologist. And he went, no problems talking about that at all. And I was like, right, okay. Now, whether that was because he was desperate to get it off of his chest, or whether it's because, do you know what, he hears it so much, he really couldn't give a crap. I think it was probably the latter. But he was absolutely fine with it. And I think just talking to him and talking about his journey and the way he came through, I think the thing that fascinated me was obviously he wasn't from Liverpool, but Liverpool was his club. He bullied his folks into taking him to football games. And as the natural course of time and the effort and everything else that he's put in finally brings him to what I guess has to be as close to a dream job, you know, other than official receiver of Klopp hugs. I don't think jobs get much better than that. And yeah, exactly. You know, and there he is. And although the one thing I did think was quite sad in a way, I asked him a question about, how does he feel when he walks into Anfield? And I think I sort of explained that whenever I go to Anfield, and as soon as I go up the steps and kind of look down onto the pitch, it just takes my breath away every single time. And I remember what a beautiful theatre Anfield truly is. And with the new stand, it's just fantastic. And a good buddy of mine, Steve, and I go, and we will be next week, hopefully getting our Auto Cup selections in and getting that sorted out. But every time we go, you know, we both react exactly the same way. And I asked James about that with it being a place of work, and he was quite honest, and he said, you know what, yeah, it does change. He says, you know, because it does become a place of work. And he even spoke about the Dortmund game when we won 4-3. And he said it's quite difficult because as a fan, he's absolutely bouncing. He's up with everybody else. He's fully involved in it. But in the back of his mind, and he says this on the pod, in the back of his mind, you know, the one thing that kept going around in his head is, well, everything you've just written over about the first 45 minutes, you're going to have to bin. Because this is
a Dortmund game,
story.
Right? How funny was that? That was the funniest reaction I've ever heard. He was like pissed off that we won because he had to rewrite the whole thing.
Because now he's got to rewrite the whole damn thing. Whereas before, you know, Borussia Dortmund, you know, came out of the traps, had Liverpool on the ropes. And whilst it was a valiant effort and whilst we did our best, you know, it just wasn't meant to be one of those European nights. And that suddenly changes to, you know, one of the greatest comebacks that we've had. And it's another great European night. And, you know, for all of us, I was there at the game. I was hugging, who's now a friend, funnily enough, called Barry. He was two rows in front of me. I dived over someone else to hug him. And, you know, my mate Steve was there, and he was hugging a guy next to us, and there was lots of random hugs flying around everywhere in a Klopp style tribute.
Glorious.
And yeah, there's poor old James sitting up there going, "You bastards. Now look what you've gone and done. Now I've only got 20 minutes to get this out."
Yeah.
You know, so you kind of all need to leave me alone now. I haven't got time to celebrate and say what an amazing game is. I've got to write this.
Yeah.
And so in a way I feel a little bit sorry for him, because it kind of must take the edge off of it.
No, definitely. Just back on the FSG point as well, I did find it quite fascinating, that he did at least as well mention, you know, oh, but you get news from FSG and all this kind of stuff. So what's to go with all that? He did quite honestly say, I am still a journalist. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and then make stuff up and pretend. I do need to have a contact within FSG who I can call and ask for information if they need clarification. So he didn't exactly dismiss the entire situation and say, "I don't talk to FSG." He still at least admitted that, yeah, of course, I'm a journalist. That's his job, as every good journalist should have, is an actual contact within the club. So again, thought that was extremely good of him to acknowledge that. So he's not an apologist. He just reports the truth of what he hears.
Absolutely. It was one of those weird ones. Do you know what? So we'd asked this question about how do you feel about, you know, being called an FSG apologist? And he basically come out and said, "Look, you know, I get it. I know what people say. What do you want me to do about it? You know, I can't change people from what they think and whatever. But basically, I'm not. But if there's a rumor that's out there that isn't true, I'm going to come out and say it's not true." And he said that he bases it on, you know, doing investigation, talking to the right people, having the contacts that you need. I said to him, people seem to think that you have a red mobile phone in your pocket and that it will ring and it's John Henry or someone from FSG saying, you know, "James, we need you to quash this because it's a load of rubbish." And you know, you then toddle off and write an article and then everyone on Twitter hates you. And he was like, "That's absolutely not the case." And I said, "But then you can understand why fans get a little bit miffed by this when you then turn around and say there's a £200 million war chest." I said, "How do you know that without having someone within FSG to talk to?" And that was when, you're right, he came out and just turned around and said, "Well, look, you know, at the end of the day, I have people I can talk to, but it's not like I talk to them every 10 minutes every time a rumor comes out. And if you believe everything that you read on Twitter, you know, then I'd constantly be on the phone to them." And I thought it was really, really interesting. He was a really interesting interview. I found that fascinating. I think probably more because he's still involved in it. If you think about Paul Tompkins, had the conversations, and a lot of stuff he was talking about was in the past. He used to write for Liverpool when Rafa was there. And I think the other thing that was interesting as well, I don't know whether you agree, Nish, was when he was talking about all of the misinformation about Rafa. When FSG took over and kind of people talking up Roy Hodgson, which still baffles me to this day. But I think with James, you know, he's still very much in the thick of it. And for him to come on and be as open as he was and talking as candidly as he was, I thought was a real plus. I thought that was a really big thing for us. And I think it was lovely for us to be able to do it. And hopefully the fans enjoy it as well.
Yeah, well, I certainly did. I mean, it's one of those... I think I'm like a lot of Liverpool fans. More knowledge is better. More information is better. It always will be. Staying away from speculation and just reading and hearing and talking official stuff. And it's refreshing as well for a journalist to really focus on actual facts, really focus on actual things. When there's an opinion piece, they will clearly say it's an opinion piece. When it's not, they will clearly say it's not. And James... from everything that I've ever read of his, it's always been facts, as in not when it's actually been the factual information. It's always been facts, and he's always been very clear when it's been opinion. And he doesn't try and pander to the popular. He does come out and say very often, FSG need to do X, Y, and Z, otherwise we will not be successful. He's not afraid of that whatsoever. And those articles come out, but yet, oh no, James Pearce apparently on Twitter can't say a thing wrong about FSG because he's paid by them. So it's just like, come on, guys, just wake up a little bit. So
absolutely. The guys that are paid by Liverpool Football Club are the guys that write on the Liverpool Football Club website.
Exactly. And that's why, just like every club, the club official statements are never, or articles are never going to say, FSG suck. So it just doesn't happen. Or our owners, Abramovich sucks, etc., etc. It just doesn't happen. So,
which, interestingly enough, was why Paul Tompkins stopped writing for LFC, because the line that they wanted to run was pretty much along the lines of, you know, Roy Hodgson is the greatest manager ever to walk the earth, and he basically just went, I just can't get in line with that. That's just not something I can do. And so that's why he kind of walked away from it. And, you know, I think it must be really, really difficult being involved or in and around LFC, especially now in the climate that we live in. Obviously, we've got the new fans ambassador. Is it fans ambassador? Is that the official?
Yeah, something along those lines.
The official title? But, yeah. Something along those lines. You know, and massive respect, I think, has to go out for his appointment. I think the choice was inspired. But he's already starting to get dogs abuse online as well, to a point where I think he actually tweeted out something along the lines of, hang on, I haven't even started the job yet, and why is everybody getting on my case? You know, and, you know, this is a man that took a stand against the Times when the Times chose not to be as emphatic about the Hillsborough inquest verdicts.
Yeah.
When he was quite entitled to.
It's just lunacy half the time. I just don't get it. Like, people always need a bad guy. They always need that scapegoat. And the guy hasn't even started. He's so popular with everyone. Oh, as soon as he becomes a Liverpool employee, ooh, he's definitely going to be a bad guy now. So just don't get it whatsoever. Are you able to give us any hints of the type of person you're going to be interviewing next? Because they've just been so brilliant so far. Or is that all completely classified?
Unlike Liverpool Football Club, there's no leaks, I'm afraid.
Damn.
So we have three more that are lined up, but that's literally all I'm giving you.
Yeah.
There are absolute belters. Time frames, we try and do one a month.
Oh, cool.
Awesome. So within the next month, there will be another one coming up, and we're going to keep those going throughout the remainder of the season and into next season as well. There are people that I would like to get involved, and there are people that I'm now starting to talk to and have a little chat with, and hopefully get something done. But we shall have to wait and see. But I'm sure, as always, if I hear anything, I'll give you the heads up. Okay. But just you,
I'm gonna ask,
not on a pod.
I'm going to ask the obvious though. I'm going to take away the obvious, shall I say. I think everyone's ultimate person would want to interview is probably Jurgen Klopp, if we're choosing someone from the club. Okay. If there was someone else, who would be your second pick from someone in the club itself that you'd like to interview?
Do you know what? I'd love to interview the physios.
Wow. Okay. Tell us why.
Well, just purely from the gossip. I mean, they, you know, what was the story behind Danny Sturridge? What was going on with you know, his time that he spent, you know, going through all the different treatments and stuff? You got Danny Ings, you know, and all the trials and tribulations, young Gomez as well, you know, Luis Suarez, who, you know, we're now hearing, you know, was playing with a swollen foot and just borrowed someone else's boot and chucked it on because it was an exciser and carried on playing. I just think that side of things, I think this is the thing that intrigues me. And I suppose in a way, anyone can go and interview, or, well, not anyone, but most people will turn around and say, oh, you know, I'd love to interview Lallana or Sturridge, or maybe not Mignolet. But, you know, there's people that they would want to interview. For me, it's what goes on behind the scenes, because we all kind of see all the other stuff that's going on. I want to know what goes on behind the scenes. I would like to get more of an insight, and I think Liverpool fans would like more of an insight into that side of things. I did the tour of Melwood which doesn't happen all the while, but there is a small window occasionally where you can go and do the tour of Melwood, and they pick you up at Anfield on the team bus, and they do the journey that the team bus will take, and you go into Anfield and you get to go and see the press conference area, and you go in and they show you around and blah blah blah, and fascinating stories that came out of it, you know, from, you know, foods that Rafa insisted on buying. And what I didn't realize was that in the canteen or the kitchen area, there are set foods that the players can have. But if they want to make a special request, they can have anything they like, but it's taken from their salary. And I think, wow. I'm sure it was Rafa was really partial to, I think it was something to do with octopus. And so they literally, but they would ship this stuff in for him, and he would get it in, and they'd cook it for him, and blah blah blah. But it would constantly come out of their salaries, and everybody had there was a coffee machine with one of the players' names on it, and you know, he had to go and buy the coffee machine because that was the coffee he wanted. They went, fine, go buy yourself a coffee machine, shove it in the corner, it's yours. Jobs are good, and all things like this. And I think they're the things that we, because we don't know about it, intrigue us, and we're like, oh, okay. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I love stuff like that. The other story that I absolutely love that I'll just tell really quickly was they banned us from taking photographs. The only place that we were allowed to take photos was in the press conference area at Melwood. And the reason this happened was because the season prior, there'd been loads of rumours about Luis Suarez leaving Liverpool, which weren't going to happen. But and what had happened was one of the people on the tour had been, and there's this box on the wall with all the players' numbers on it, and their boots are in there. So when they go to do their training, they go and grab their boots, put their boots on, go out to training. And Luis Suarez's hole was empty. His boots weren't in there. And someone took a photo of it and tweeted it out, surprisingly, and put the caption, Suarez has definitely been sold. His boots aren't here and everybody else's are. And they're absolutely right. His boots weren't there. Everybody else's were. But the next thing you know, there was 30 odd reporters outside Melwood. All of the mainstream media were running with this and, you know, photographic evidence and blah, 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 blah. The reason his boots weren't in there was because he'd changed his sponsor. And so Jesus. The boots weren't his sponsor's boots. And I think he was also going off onto international duty over the closed period. So he took what kit was there because he'd got new kit coming in. And because of the absolute stress that it caused after that, because then obviously you've got all the reporters outside and then they've got to make a press statement and turn around and say, no, he hasn't left. And, you know, there's nothing to see here, you know, move on. And they weren't taking no for an answer. And it just, so they banned photographs outright. So you could take photos in the main foyer where Big Ears is situated. You could take photos in the press room, but everywhere else was an absolute no-go area. And again, insane, I think just shows how things have changed. But that's why I'd like to speak to physios. I'd love to talk to the woman who does all the cooking and stuff, or the guy, whoever it may be, just because I think it would be fascinating because they've got the stories no one else will tell you.
Yeah, definitely. It's speaking to Kornmeyer and those guys as well, you know, just absolutely fascinating. So,
who would yours be?
Sorry? Oh, me.
Who would yours be? Well, I'm an interviewer as well, so I'm going to throw some questions back at you, Nish. It's not a one-way thing.
Thanks, mate. The person who fascinates me a hell of a lot and is going to be the person who runs the events. It sounds really weird, but I've seen this person in action, and the things that they have to think about when Liverpool do a single tour, when they go around, you would not believe the kind of stuff that obviously a club the size of Liverpool has to go through. And the amount of information and checks and double checks and triple checks and tour and travel arrangements and then legals and commercial responsibilities, and then all of that whittles down to the players themselves. It's just the amount of information they have to retain and organize for every single trip is just ludicrous. And so being a kind of like a business guy myself, that level of responsibility and knowledge and organization just fascinates the hell out of me. So if I was going to go a little bit, you know, sideways, that individual is just totally blows my mind. So, and I know it sounds weird to a lot of people probably listening to this, but until you see it in action, it's just, yeah, it's totally mind-blowing.
Absolutely. And I think that's the fascinating thing, isn't it? And that's what makes the Getting to Know You pods as well fascinating, because instead of focusing on all the obvious, on the obvious stuff, what we try and do is we try and focus on the stuff that's not as obvious, that's a little bit off the cuff, shall we say, a little bit just, you know, off on a tangent, that doesn't necessarily exactly, you know, something that just makes people go, oh really, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. Definitely. But it has been just about, I think it's just cracking on an hour, must be just a little bit over an hour, but I think we'll end it there. Rich, it's been absolutely hugely fascinating interviewing the interviewer. Maybe I should make this a new segment for the podcasting couch. So just want
to
thank
you. Maybe we should get you on, Nish. Ooh. Maybe that's what we should do. Maybe people need to get to know Nish.
I know nothing.
You know everything.
I know nothing. So the thing is, when you bare your soul on a podcast once or twice a week, hours and hours on end, I think people kind of get to know who you are a little bit if they're regular listeners anyway. So I don't think anyone will find that too fascinating. Maybe the whole journey of creating a podcast. I don't know. People seem to be asking me a bit about that. But no, really, I don't know anything.
I'd quite like to try and get the guys from the Anfield Wrap on, but I don't think that will ever happen. But I think that would be another fascinating one.
Andy Heaton, those guys.
Absolutely. I think that would be fascinating. So Andy Heaton, and you know, if you are tuned in, anyone from the Anfield Wrap, I subscribe to the Tour Player. So listen, you know, if you're out there listening, and I'm sure you are, because everyone's a big fan of Nish, drop me a tweet, will you?
Do it. Makes no sense.
Get something sorted out.
For sure. It's I am hoping to do one with another one of those kind of groups. They messaged saying they would, but nice. I've personally been quite busy organizing my wedding and everything. We won't go into that, but yeah, we'll see how that goes. Hopefully getting big time even more. So we'll see what happens. Oh Jesus, sorry, just smacked my microphone. Rich, thank you so much for joining on the couch, having a one-on-one session, and I'm sure everyone found that very, very interesting, and definitely looking forward to hearing more Getting to Know podcasts on the Anfield Road walls.
Keep your eyes open. They'll be there soon.
Nice one. Thanks a lot. And everyone listening,
cheers.
Have a very good day or night. Goodbye.
Lovely cushion header. Pacheco!